the parsha, and let's just discuss for a little bit just some basic yesodos in a selected psukim that come out of this week's parsha. Parsha, one of the halachos of the parsha we spent time on yesterday is v'chisimkuru mimkar la'amisecha oikono miyad amisecha al toinu ish es ochiv. If a person engages in business, if a person chooses to sell something or a person chooses to acquire something, you should not do any evil. Do not cause harm to your fellow man. That's a topic. That's not what I want to talk about. I want to talk about the pasuk makes mention if you will sell something or if you will purchase something. Question, how does one go about buying and selling? What are the methods? So we know there are psukim in the Torah. This is a sugi masechta kedushin, and it's also above a metzia. There are various techniques as to how we make acquisitions. There is kinyan kesef, kinyan shtar, kinyan chazaka. Those are the basic three. You can buy property with money, with a document, with a chazaka. Those are the basic three acquisitions. There's a kinyan called kinyan agav. That's when you want to buy two things together. But those are the basic. Those are the basic. Then there's something called kinyan meshicha, when you can take it into your possession. And the Gemara has a very lengthy discussion exactly what is the technique one engages in commerce between two Jews, and what is the technique that one engages in when purchasing or selling to a non-Jew. And they're different. It's not the same. So you can really break everything down into four categories. There is movable property, metaltalin, karka, for a Jew and a goy. So there's when a Jew buys land from a Jew, when a Jew buys or sells from a Jew land, or real estate, or when a Jew buys or sells metaltalin from a Jew, where a Jew buys or sells metaltalin from a non-Jew, or where a Jew buys or sells metaltalin, a karka, from a non-Jew. So basically, there are really basically four different categories, and each has its own special rules, and they all basically come down to three kinyonim called kesef, where you give money, shtar, you write up a document, and the money then really is a loan, and chazaka, where you physically take possession of the property or the object, and also in that case, the money will be a loan. The money is something that is secondary. But there's something else that is called kinyan situmta. Situmta. And this is the Gemara Masechta Bava Metzia, Amar Papi B'Shmei D'Rava, Hai Situmta Kanya. There is, now situmta what is the word situmta? The literal meaning of the word situmta, Rashi there, Masechta Bava Metzia, translates a choisam. It is a seal. It is a seal that they etch or they place on top of merchandise, of bottles of wine, to indicate that these bottles of wine have been sold. In other words, you ever go to the matzah bakery in the good old days before everything was locked up? So you go in, you see there from wall to wall, you see boxes of matzah, and you say, oh, can I buy some matzah? Oh, sorry, all sold out. What do you mean you're sold out? Look what you have here in front of you. All of this is already sold. All of the boxes you see in front of your eyes, sorry, they're being shipped out. They're already sold. There's nothing left for you. Or come back tomorrow. Right now, there's... What do you mean sold? Yeah, everything here is sold. Did they pay for it already? Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. Okay, so in ancient times, you had a similar situation. You walk into a store, and I want to buy wine. I want to buy a barrel of wine. And they say to you, sorry, it's all sold. What do you mean it's sold? Look what you got over here in front of my eyes. Yeah, it's already sold. Did the buyer pay you? Did he actually give you cash? No, he didn't. Oh, well, I have here cash. I got an Uncle Abe. I got an Andrew. I got some Georges. I got them all. I got even some Benjamins. How many Benjamins do you want to give me? Did he give you a Benjamin? I got a Benjamin. What's the problem? Sorry, I see the Benjamins, but we've already sold the barrels to someone else. Where was the Kenyan? The Kenyan was, we wrote down his initials on the barrel. On the barrel, we place what's called a situm ta. Rashi, a choysam, a seal, shereishmim, hachenvinim, the storekeepers, alachavioi shel yayin, on the barrels of wine, shelokim chari biyachad, they buy a lot of barrels, but we can't take it home now. We have to come back with the car. We just want to make sure we got them. Umanichim oisam be'oitzar haba'olim. They leave it in the store. Umaylichin oisam achas limkar lechanus, and they take them one at a time. V'roishmim oisam ladas, and they make a symbol on it to know shekol harishumois nimkarois. All of the barrels of wine which have the initials of the buyer on it are sold. Don't touch. The buyer is coming later to pick up the merchandise. He can't take them all in one shot. He has to come and take them one at a time to his store, wherever he needs to bring them to. Maybe there's like a wholesaler, and the wholesaler is selling to the stores, and each storekeeper comes, picks it up one at a time, and it's already been sold, and they make this situm ta. And according to the Gemara over here says that when you make this situm ta, it's a done deal. The sale is final. Now, if the sale is final, what does that mean? Let's say the buyer comes and he says to the storekeeper, Mr. Storekeeper, you know what? I change my mind. I don't want the barrels. So if the sale is final, the storekeeper can sue him in court. What do you mean it's final? It's your property. You owe me money. If you don't pay me the money, I will sue you in court. And the Beis Din will acknowledge that the sale was complete. You owe me money. And they will repossess your property to guarantee that I get my money. The barrels of wine are yours. I don't want them anymore. If the market goes down, the value goes down, that's your problem, not my problem. It's a final sale. The buyer says, what are you talking about? As far as I know, in Shulchan Aruch it says, when you make a sale, you need kesef, shtar, or chazaka, or kinyan agav, meshicha. There are basic principles of transactions. There are basic rules to the way you acquire property. Okay, we'll go through Shulchan Aruch. We'll follow the rules of Shulchan Aruch, how exactly you make an acquisition. But I'm sorry, this type of transaction, just because you put on the barrel my initials, that means the sale is final to the degree where now you're going to take me to court and you're going to sue me and Beis Din's going to say that's right, you win and I lose? I can't believe this. This is not what it says in the Gemara. Nowhere in the Torah does it say that when you go and you mark down my initials on your barrel, that automatically it's sold and I have to pay you the money. What are you talking about? This is called, no, the answer is yes, because this is what's called the Derech HaMoichrim. This is the way business is conducted. This is universal. This is society. This is accepted in society that the sale is final when you put the initials on the barrel. By extension, every industry has its own unique kinyan situm ta. Diamond dealers, mazel ubracha. They shake hands. I don't know what they're going to do now. No one can shake hands now. No one knows what's going to do anymore. Are you ever going to, Mark, are you ever going to shake my hand? Are you ever going to shake someone's hand in the future? Are you ever going to shake someone's hand? Eschato ani maskir. On Shabbos, you know, on Shabbos, I have to tell you, past Shabbos, I went for a walk and I met a lot of people. And the diversity of opinion about Corona, where we're holding, is so vast. I never ever saw such a difference of opinion among every person. One person is so scared, He's still locked up in his house with plastic over the door. Another guy I meet on Shabbos, he looks at me and he says to me, as far as I'm concerned, we're done. And he grabs my hand and he shakes my hand and he gives me a hug. I'm done with this. I don't want to know from this anymore. And most other people are somewhere in the middle. Nishtahi, nishtaher. Okay, you go from the people that are still hermetically sealed with plastic behind their doors to people that are willing to kiss you and hug you. Everyone, the diversity is mamish, unbelievable. There's something called Kinyan Situm Tov by diamond dealers. And the way they seal a deal is they shake hands, a thing of the past. One in the olden days, they used to actually shake hands. And then they would say, Mazel l'bracha. And that means it's a done deal. And once you shake hands and you say Mazel l'bracha, there's no going back. If you don't pay the money, the other fellow can take
is
you to court.
Is that
Yeah.
The
kiyas kaf, yeah. There's no kinyan, there's no halach in the Torah called no halach in the Torah. There's kesef, shtar, chazaka, meshicha. There's no such thing as shaking hands. Shaking hands is a convention of society. It's kinyan si tum ta. When it comes to the barrels, the literal translation si tum ta is the roisham, the seal that's put on a barrel. By extension, when you shake hands and you say mazul ubracha, and some businesses you make a l'chaim, you take a drink, a liquor, some schnapps, and you make a l'chaim. That's the end. That's the gemar. And once that happens, there is no going back. And you can go to court and you can tell the person the person owes you the money. The deal is over, and you can take him to court and you can sue. You're going to win. The kinyan sintum ta. So the question is, where does this halacha come from? What are the parameters? So the truth is, yes.
By a vart, when they make, before the vart, they make a l'chaim. There's no going back after the l'chaim also?
No. Definitely not. That's why you have to have tanoim. You have to have, they sign documents. That's why today we don't do tanoim, because we're afraid they're going
to
break it up.
Understanding.
But you have to appreciate something, that even if you hold, it's not binding, there is a principle in business called Misha Para. If you give your word, a word is a word. And there's something called a curse. The curse is called Misha Para. Misha Para Midar Hamabul, Midar Hamabul, Midar Haflaga, who Osidli Para Mi Misha Eino Oimed Bidiburai. The one who destroyed the world in the Dar HaMabul and the Dar HaFlaga, two different things, Hashem the Mabul and the Dar HaFlaga, Hashem dispersed the people in the world, he will come and he will punish a person that does not keep his word. In other words, in this world, if the business deal is incomplete, you get back your money or you get back the merchandise, you will lose in court. But that does not absolve you from a divine curse. If a person promises, he gives his word that he will commit to a transaction, to buy a house, to buy merchandise, and there is a clear commitment, then there's a curse if you don't keep your word. But you're not obligated to keep your word. If you want your money
this was very Nogela Meisa this year with all the caterers from the hotels that cancel their orders.
Misha Para.
They never took it, and instead of getting refunds from because it was canceled, I mean, the people who paid for it in advance, now the caterer only gave back the cost of the rooms and the, like, 40 or 50% they gave them, they shipped them the food to the people who stayed home. That's what they were doing.
Some of them. It's very complicated. Yeah. Okay, this also, you know, there's not necessarily a curse, because, you know, what he's supposed to do? Everyone's losing here. Everyone. Obviously, every case is unique. Every case has its own. The Batei Dinim now are packed. And the courts,
right.
And the courts in secular law, there's no end to this. This is gonna go on for decades. It's literally gonna go on for decades in the secular court, finding out all of the collateral damage of all the commitments and business arrangements that were put into place that now have gone down the drain. I know someone, he told me that he works in construction, it's not his money, but there was a deal with the contractor that if they finish the job, They desperately wanted the work to be done at a certain time. It's very typical in contracting. It's all in the documents that if you get the job done early, for every day the job is complete, there's a bonus. And for every day the job is late, there's a penalty. That was built into the contract. Because this is a time-sensitive matter, people have to move into the apartments, there are issues, and built into the contract are bonuses and penalty on the completion of the work. And now, obviously, nothing's happening now because everything's been shut down. So what does that mean for the contract? How now do you adjust the bonus? That's just one of probably tens of thousands of situations that has to be dealt with both in halacha and in secular law. How do you deal with this? So it's not necessarily, just because it's a commim does not necessarily it's going to be nisr. But the question over here is, generally in the world of business, there are two issues. There are two different concepts. There is a transaction. A transaction is final. And if you want your money back, too bad. If it's not in the contract, there's no refund, you go to court, you're going to win. And then there's something called a word, a commitment. In Bezdin, you lose. In secular court, you lose. But in Shamayim, you win. Or it depends from whose perspective. In Shamayim, it counts. Not in this world. And that's all called Misha Parah Midor Hamabul Midor Aflaku Osli Parah Mimi She'enoi Oimed Bidiburo. If you give a clear commitment, you're in a lot of trouble. Here is the dilemma. When we talk about Kinyan Situm Ta, it's not so simple what exactly you're accomplishing. It's a machloikis rishonim if Kinyan Situm Ta is binding, like I mentioned until now, to the point where you can go to court and you will win just like you've done a full-fledged bona fide transaction, or maybe Kinyan Situm Ta is nothing more than the completion of Mishepara Midar Hamabul Umidar Aflagu Asli Par Mimish Oinoimid Bidiburai. In other words, if you go into a store and you browse, and you, a very simple case, you go into a store and you browse and you pick up and you see on the counter a book. Go to a Judaica store, go to Eichler's, and you see there on the table there a book that you like. You pick it up, a cookbook, a nice cookbook you want to buy for your wife. You pick up a cookbook, you pick it up. When you pick up that cookbook, you're basically committing to buy it, no? Because you're in the store, there's a salesman. What would you like? Can I help you? I want this, they want that. How about this? Oh, you know, yeah. It's exactly what I want. Thank you. You pick it up. And you're on the way to the cash register. And then you say, you know something? Who needs it? Who needs it? And you put it back down on the table. Are you in violation of Misha Para Midar Hamabul Midar Haflaga Hu Asili Para Mimisha Eina Oimin Bidiburai? I picked it up and I told the salesman, yes, this is exactly what I want to buy. Maybe it wasn't even the salesman, maybe it was the owner of the store. He was there himself helping you find the book that you want. Does that mean just because you picked it up and you said, yes, oh, I've been looking for this, I want this, yes, I want it. Let's say you call up the day before and you tell them, do you have this? Put it aside for me. Put it aside for me. I'm afraid there's going to be a run on this item. Put it aside for me. And then the next day you call and you say, you know what? I don't want it. I don't care. I don't need it. I don't need it.
How about a return policy? How about a return? It's the same thing.
Okay, but there's enoch and I, but let's not get that far. Let's just discuss basic. So the answer is obviously no. The understanding today is just because you walk into a store and you pick up a book off the shelf and you say to the owner, yes, I want to buy this, that means nothing. That's not called Misha Parah. That's not understood today in a store. You walk into a store, no one is going to tell you that's called a commitment. You've committed. It's not understood. That's not the way, and that's not the way we live today. We don't look at picking up a book in the store and thinking about buying it, that you're committing yourself. You need a little bit more than that. You need a little bit more than just picking up the book. If there's an open house and you come in, you look around, and it looks like, yeah, you know, this is what I want to buy. I want to go buy this apartment. I want to buy this house. And you start negotiating. Just because you start to negotiate and you indicate that you want to buy the house, That doesn't mean that if you change your mind, you're subject to a horrific curse of Mishapara, Midor Hamal, Midor Aflogo, Chas V'Sholem. You have to do something a little bit more. There has to be more of a commitment to be subject to the curse. Okay, it's not so simple just to get involved in something. A boy and girl get engaged. Okay, they get engaged and they have a lavish engagement party. It costs $5,000, the engagement party. Does that mean if they, and there's no, they don't sign any documents. They don't sign the tanoim. Do we say that since they went and they participated in this lavish engagement party, which cost $5,000, the parents paid for it, whoever paid for it, and they both participated, even they paid for it, they both participated and they invited all the friends and guests, does that mean that there's a binding commitment? And if now one of these two parties breaks their word and wants to break the engagement for no good reason, if there's a good reason, there's nothing to talk about. If you want to break the engagement because there was some real bona fide misunderstanding or something that was not known, okay, that's a different story. But let's say the guy just gets cold feet or the girl gets cold feet and for no good reason they break their commitment. Is there a curse of Mishapara, Midar Hamal, Midar Aflog, who also lipar mi Misha Einoi, Oimeid Bidiburoi, is participating in your own engagement party, Nichlal in that? It's a big problem. And the understanding is, I think, pretty much yes. If you already have a vart, an engagement party, and you want to break the engagement for nothing, you can't do that. You can't do that. You're in a lot of trouble. You're in a lot of trouble. And that's why a lot of Rabbanim are very, very scared of this. And they advise a chassan kal who wants to do this. First of all, they advise everyone in the literature world, don't dare sign the tanoim. Because if you sign the tanoim, then you're finished. You're toast. There's a get to get out of a marriage, but there's no get to get out of signing the tanoim. There's nothing legal you can do to break a tanoim. There's something legal you can do to break a marriage. Hashem gave a way out of a marriage through a get krisos, but the Chazal did not give a way to get out of an engagement through any type of document. So that's why in the Litvisha world, generally they do not sign tanoim because they're afraid there may be a broken engagement for no good reason. But let's say they did not sign the tanoim and there just was a vart and there was a party. So even though there's no legal document, but there's still a problem of a commitment, and a commitment is subject to Mishapara. So how do you get out of that? So it's a big, big problem. And Rabbanim advise you should actually get from the other side a shtar mechila. If the boy breaks the engagement, then the girl, the one who is engaged to, should actually write up for him a document that says that she forgives him. And the way you have her do this is you pay her a lot of money. Well, the other way around, if the girl breaks the engagement, she has to ask the boy to write up a document that explicitly says that he forgives her. She should not be punished with the curse of Mishapara, Midar Hamal, Midar Aflaga. And the way you soften the request that each side should write a shtar mechila is a lot of money changes hands. That is the minug that takes place. Hopefully it should never ever happen, but unfortunately, that's only in the case where there's a broken engagement for no reason. No reason, just stop. Guy gets engaged, he's committed, and then all of a sudden he changes his mind. It's a big problem. Now here's the question. When we talk about Situm Tah, does Situm Tah just an example of something which finalizes the commitment to make it into a Mishapara, or do we say that the Situm Tah goes even further? It has the status of a full-fledged transaction, not just a commitment, to the degree where you can go to court and extract money from the other tzad. This is a major machloikis ha-poiskim. Most poiskim seem to indicate that it goes all the way. It's a full-fledged transaction. And you know where we learn this from? We learn this from Rus and Boyas. When Boyas wanted to acquire all of the possessions of the Goyel, okay, the Goyel was obligated to be the one to acquire all of the possessions, and the Goyel wanted out, and Boyas wanted to take his place, and a legal transaction was needed in order for Boaz to acquire all of the property from her husband.
From Elimelech's
estate. Elimelech's estate. Thank you very much. Elimelech's estate. So it says, V'zois lifonim bi Yisrael. Al ha-ge'ulav yalatmura lekayim kol davar v'sholaf ish na'aloi v'nosan l're'eyu. V'zois hat'udah bi Yisrael. What did they do? What kind of transaction? They did a kinyan sudar? They did a kinyan sudar. They exchanged a handkerchief. V'sholaf ish na'aloi. Simply means he took off his glove. He took off his shoe, which is not necessarily, it means his glove. He took off his glove. Okay, either his shoe or his glove. Simply means he took off his glove. Basically, he picked up a handkerchief. Wait a minute. I ask you, cite me chapter and verse where we find taking a handkerchief is called a legal transaction. Nowhere. It's kshtar, chazaka, kesef. There is maybe chalipin. There is meshicha. There's no such thing as kinyan sudar. That's exactly what it says in the pasuk. V'zois lifonim bi Yisrael. This was kinyan situmta. It was a convention that was done amongst people. It was a convention. And this convention is binding because this transaction that took place with Boaz for the estate of Elimelech was a binding arrangement. And we learn from this, I mean, it's pretty powerful, that kinyan situmta, it's lefonim b'Yisrael, it was accepted from time immemorial as a legal means of transaction, and it's being used now, even though it's not in the Torah, it's nothing more than a custom, and it was binding. From here we learn that the Pashto says that the kinyan situmta is not just to seal a commitment to engage Misha Pora, but you don't have to pay the money. There's only going to be a curse. The curse, you don't care about the curse, or you basically you'll give him a gift. Your attitude is, listen, I want back the money. It's $1 million business deal. I want to back out. So if the transaction is binding, I lose. I can't back out. If the transaction is not binding, I get back my $1 million, but I'm subject to the curse. You know what? For the curse, I'll give the guy $100. I'll give him maybe $1,000. Maybe I'll give him $10,000. He'll be very happy. He'll be very happy, and he'll write me a shtar that says, I forgive you. You're my best friend. I'll kiss you even in quarantine. That's how much I'm willing to risk my life for you. Because you gave me $10,000, so I'll write for you a shtar mechila, because kinyan situmta is not binding. Or maybe not. Maybe kinyan situmta is binding. From Boyaz, it's mashma that it is binding. Okay, that is the basic of kinyan. Now here is something that is very, very fascinating. Now here is, now after we discussed that, here is a very big dilemma, and it's very much related. There's another layer of dilemma in kinyan situmta. Even if you're going to tell me that kinyan situmta works and it's binding, who says it's binding for karka? Maybe it's only binding in transactions involving metaltalin, movable objects, but not regarding land, karka. Now you'll ask, by Boaz, it was karka. Was it not karka? Yes, it was. It's a problem. We have to figure out a solution to that question. Maybe it wasn't karka. Maybe it was just a commitment of who's gonna proceed and acquire the karka. You have to work out all the details. I don't know. It's a little complex exactly what was going on with Elimelech and Boaz and the Goyel, the Ploini Almoini. What was going on over there? Who's buying what? What exactly is he acquiring? Acquiring rights? Is he actually acquiring the land? The simple understanding is he wasn't acquiring the land. He was acquiring the rights. The rights to be the one who will acquire. It wasn't necessarily acquiring the actual karka itself. Many Paiskim want to suggest that this principle called kinyan situm ta, mazel ubracha, l'chaim, a handshake, tkiyas kaf, all of these modern conventions of how you seal the deal is only binding in halacha regarding movable property, not true regarding karka. Karka, real estate, is different. Now, I'll prove. Now, what would be the source? It doesn't say this in the Sefer, but I'll explain to you what the Makor really comes from. And this is something that is very, very interesting. This whole topic is interesting because of this reason. There is one place that every single Pesach across the board, from top to bottom, B'li yoytzei min haklal, there is less man the polig, where kinyan si tumta does not work. Okay, you're going to find Paiskim telling you can do these kinyan situm ta, mazal bracha type of kinyanim, convention of what we do in society today, ribbon cut, you know, you have a ribbon cutting ceremony. Little Rocket Man, he just had one of those. He's missing again. Okay, you go, you have a ribbon ceremony. It's also a gemar. It's also you seal the deal. It also can be like a kinyan situm ta. When you do a ceremonial type of a procedure, you'll find that it works just about everywhere to some degree. But there's one exception. Does anyone want to guess that one exception where kinyan situm ta does not work? It's an amazing insight. Marriage. Marriage, it does not work. When a man marries a woman, under the chuppah, he must make a kinyan. Kinyan. There are three kinyanim he can make. There's either kesef, shtar, or bia. No one gets married with bia, because that would be pritzus. Pritzus. Rav, mangid, aman, de mekadesh, the bia. You know what it would mean? Bia would mean that the man says to a woman in front of two witnesses, I hereby intend to be mekadesh this isha with bia, and in front of two witnesses, and then the chas and kala go into a room and lock the door, and the two witnesses watch that they don't come out. That's what it would mean. Rav doesn't mean that they actually watch the maisa bia. It means they make a declaration and then they go into a room in private and they don't come out. That would be, we don't do that today. That would be would be pritzus. People think that the pritzus is that they would do something in public. That's so simple. That's not even a human being would do that in public. That's not even in the geder of a hava amina, such a degree of lowliness. What it means, Rav, Mangin, Aman, Mekadesh, Rabbi, is like the Yichud room today, pretty much. It's like, they go, but the only difference is that before you go into the Yichud room, he says to the Rabbanim, the witnesses, I hereby are going to be Mekadesh, this woman is being Mekudesh, Asli, with a Mais, a Bia, and then they privately go into a room. So we don't do that today. We today are not Mekadesh with Shtar. For a man to give a woman a shtar would be a nightmare. You know what it means? It means you have to have a piece of parchment, and you have to have a sofer by every wedding, and you have to have ink, and the sofer has to know how to write a ksav ashuris, and the chosn has to give me mitzvah, like a get, sending us a get. He has to say to the sofer, I hereby appoint you to write the shtar of marriage on my behalf. And then the sofer, he says, I'm writing this shtar, l'shem, Ruvain, and this kala, chana. And then he sits down by a table and he takes the dioy and he writes, Harei ad mikudeshli b'tabarazo kedas moshe v'yishrol. Not that, Harei ad mikudeshli b'shtar zeh kedas moshe v'yishrol. And they have to, it's like a chnosa sefer Torah. You have to come with a blow dryer and make sure the ink dries, nice and dry. You ever see that by a chnosa sefer Torah? They have a blow dryer. It takes a long time until they finally have to, whenever puts in their dots. You know, they can do that. They can have a whole ceremony. You can be mechabit all the people. So mayor, it's a great idea, mayor. They have a wedding, and everyone that comes to the wedding has a kibbutz to put a dot into the shtar, into the words, Hare at mikudesh asli b'shtar zo kidas moshe v'yisrael. Mechubit, you, this person, to put a dot, and to put a dot, and then take the blow dryer, and then you finally make sure it's dry, and then finally the chassid picks up the shtar, and he gives the shtar to the kala. That's the way you would
get. Already.
What?
They take the pen. They take a bunch of pens to write it, and it's they give out the pens to the mechatanim.
Interesting. It's like the president signs a new law. Okay, so that no one does that. That's ridiculous. That would take forever, and you mess it up so big, it would be a disaster. So what do? Kesef, the chassan takes a tabas. He can, if he wants, he can take out. He can take out anything, any shavah kesef, and give it to the kala. Question. Why doesn't the chassan say to the kala, let's get married with kinyan sudar? Under the chuppah, the chassan will take out a handkerchief. It's like a mitzvah dance under the chuppah. And will give the sudar to the kala, and will tell the kala, kala, by you picking up the sudar, we're married. Well, the kala will give the chassan a sudar, and the chassan will pick up the sudar, he'll raise it 3 tefachim in the air, and this will be the kinyan to get married. Or we can make up other conventions. We can make up, when you break the glass, the way you get married is you break a glass. You remember the Churban Yerushalayim. That's the convention to get married. Great idea. Just like when it comes to business, we have a pasuk, V'zois lefonim b'Yisrael al ha'gulu v'al tmur l'kayim kol dover v'sholaf ish naloi. Nowhere in the Torah does it say v'sholaf ish naloi, and yet it works. So yet v'zois lefonim b'Yisrael, if this is the minig of this thing called situm toh, it works. It's binding. It works. At least it makes a transaction where you can't go back on it even legally. So why can't we do this with marriage as well? The answer is Gzeres HaKosef. Ki yikach ish isha. The Gemara Darshins, kicha, the Gemara Zedrasha, each one of them. Kesef, Shtar, and Bia. Kicha, Mistei, Ephraim. Shtar, Chukish, Havaya, Liyitzia. And Bia, what's the Makar? Ubolas, a Pasuk, also the Gemara makes a Drasha. It's a Gezeras, HaKosef. When it comes to marriage, there's no such thing as minhag. Marriage, the only kinyan for marriage is the real deal. It's the only acquisition in the world that is not subject l'chol hadeis to kinyan si tumta. When it comes to metaltalin, everyone agrees there is a kinyan si tumta. There is a dilemma. Is kinyan si tumta binding, or is it at least mishapara? When it comes to karka, there's even a more fundamental debate if kinyan si tumta works, period, with regard to karka. But at least there are opinions that say that it does work when it comes to karka. But when it comes to marriage, where we need there to be a kinyan, it is the only thing that is not subject to kinyan si tumta. Now, that speaks volumes.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
Boaz got a wife out of this deal. How come?
No, Boaz married. No, it says he gathered 10 people. Boaz married his wife with a regular kiddushin of either of kesef or shtar. Regular kiddushin. The goyel, Boaz, acquired the right to marry her. He acquired the right to redeem the property. The kinyan that he made that it says in the pasuk, "V'zois lefonim b'Yisrael alagul v'altuul l'kaim v'altuul v'shol v'shnalay," was not the marriage. That's clear as day. There is no one that says that. All of the mefarshim across the board, there were two issues. There was a requirement in halacha, v'chiyamuch achicha v'nimkar. The pasuk goes on to say that the closest relative has an obligation to redeem the assets of the closest of kin. And not only does they have an obligation, there's also a right. And Boaz was not the closest relative. The kinyan that he made was to take the place of the closest relative. Peloni Almoni was the closest relative. He is the one that was entitled to take, to redeem all of the property of Elimelech. And the minig was, with the redemption of the property, you also are the one that has first rights, basically, to marry the widow. That's all he did with the transaction, with the Shalaf Ishnalai. But when it came time to marry Rus, he married Rus like every other person, with Kesef. Doesn't say how he married her. The simple understanding is, I guess, Kesef, the Kesef Shtarubia. That's it. There's no such thing. It's a Gezeres HaKosef. Now, this Yesoid speaks volumes about, it's not our topic today, about Jewish marriage. After Lag BaOmer, people get married, but this speaks volumes about Jewish marriage. Jewish marriage is not a fad. In the secular world, marriage, the whole approach to marriage, the approach to a relationship of man and woman, is subject to society, the generation you live in. Okay, I don't have to be married to understand this. Okay, you know, to appreciate this is that in the olden days, by the goyim, when a person got married, it meant one thing, and today getting married by the goyim means something totally else. I'm not going to elaborate. Hamev and Yavin, it's a different world. What is marriage all about? I'll just tell you one story I told you probably before. Is this blew my mind? The Brady Bunch. You know, sometimes you get a little bored online, and you know you click Inyan Ba'isa Inyan before you realize you're in the wrong place. So you start reading these crazy articles. They have these things on the bottom of the page about these things, about your old shows. So I was reading the Brady Bunch. You all have to have seen the Brady Bunch, because right now we're all on the Brady Bunch. We have this is the synthesis of Hollywood Squares and the Brady Bunch. Zoom. Everyone is in a box, just like in Hollywood Squares. Everyone is in the box, just like the opening part of the Brady Bunch, where they show the man and the woman and their family. They're all in a box. So I read online that the producers of that television show, you all know that television show from back in the day, they were both widows, a widower and a widow. She, the woman, was a widow, and he, his wife, died. They never showed you who their previous husband and wives were, and they got married. The original script for the Brady Bunch by the producers was, he was a divorcee, a gorush, and he was divorced, and she was a divorcee. That was the original script of the Brady Bunch. And you know what happened? They had a meeting and they said, America cannot deal with this. America cannot handle a television show where the primary actor is portraying a person who got divorced, a woman who got divorced. Divorce? What are you talking about? Impossible. Who gets divorced? It's a chorban. It's such a chorban. This cannot possibly appear on a television screen in America to portray such a horror, such a busha, a chorban. And they had to change the script from them being people who were who had divorced, to a family of tsaris, of both of them lost a spouse. That has a very big nafkamina for the children. Children are not coming from a divorced home. The children are coming from a home where. So what does that go to show? Now today, you tell this, look, I see some of your faces, like you're in shock. Like, what? What? What are you talking about? What are you talking about? It would have been a much better show if they were both divorced, because then each one of those kids would be really messed up. Bobby would really be messed up because he has a mother, right? He has a real mother, and now he has a stepmother. He'll be really messed up, and all of them will also be messed up. And when you put them all together in the same house, wow, you'd be dealing with off the charts. They would have to have the whole show. If you watch the show, you would need a psychologist. Just to watch the show, you would go meshuga, right? It would be really good chaymer ledrush. America can't deal with it. They can't deal with it. Now today, adarava, today, it's different. So what does it mean? Marriage in the geusha welt is subject, the meaning of marriage, the value of marriage, the commitment to marriage is all toluy in the minig hamedina, the minig hasoichrim, the minig hasoichrim. If this is the way people seal a deal, mazel u'bracha, if the commitment of marriage means 7 years, an average of 7 years in America, how long does an average marriage last? I think 7 years, maybe even less. How long does it last? That's what it is. That's what marriage is. The Torah was way ahead of its time. And the Torah was megale, v'zois lefonim b'yishol ha'legul v'yatum l'kayim v'olei v'shol v'yishnalai. Transactions, kinyonim. There's something called situmta. You can legally acquire something. You can legally commit yourself like the minhag ha'medina. The minhag ha'medina, whatever the Medina wants, gesunte hate, fine and good with everyone. But there's one exception. There's one type of commitment. There's one type of kinyan that is not, you don't have a choice. The meaning of marriage, the commitment of marriage, the definition of marriage is not for you to define. It is not for society to define. It's not for the culture to decide. It's not for a nation to decide. It's not subject to your laws and rules and regulations. It's subject to Hashem's divine will. His divine will is a marriage. It means what it means. And to Hashem flexes his muscles to express that marriage is what he wants it to be by telling you it's the only place. B'chol ha-Torah kula, all transactions that doesn't work with the minhag ha-medina. The kinyan is the way I tell it to you. Kesef shtar bia. That's where it starts. That's where it stops. The minhag ha-soichrim, the minhag ha-medina, the kinyan situmta does not enter into the picture. Okay, so that's a lesson we take out of this parasha. The chazer in 10 seconds. We didn't learn all that much. There's something called kinyan situmta. Situmta is what's called the minhag ha-soichrim. Whatever is the convention, that would, and every single industry has its convention to signify it's a done deal. And the word situmta literally comes from the very first of these conventions, which is when it comes to wine. You have a wholesaler, he's selling barrels of wine. When he puts your initials or the seal on the barrel, sold. We have a dilemma amongst the poskim. Is it a final sale or is situmta nothing more than to trigger the curse of Mishapara? The nafka mina is, can you break the deal? If you can break the deal, break the deal. Oh, what about the curse? You got a problem. The way you're going to have to smooth out the curse by asking the fellow to forgive you and to write for you a shtar mechila, and sometimes that can cost a lot of money to get that shtar mechila. Or maybe no, maybe kinyan situmta is a real full-fledged transaction. Even if you'll tell me it's a full-fledged transaction, there's another dilemma. Maybe it only applies when it comes to metaltalin. Maybe when it comes to karka, we don't apply that principle. But one thing is certain, l'chol adeus, it does not apply when it comes to marriage. Marriage needs only kesef shtar or bia, nothing else. And that is a Musa Haskel, that marriage is not subject to the whims, fads, and and the mindset of society, the commitment and binding in marriage, the transaction of marriage, which really means the connection of man and woman, is in Hashem's Hashem's rules, Hashem's understanding. Okay, we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to talk about another very interesting topic for Shavuos, Simchas Yom Tov. What Bizman Hazeh is the precise mitzvah of Simcha on Yom Tov? I'll see you back in 60 seconds after this commercial break.